Welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking podcast where real engineers get together to talk about networking. The Packet Pushers is a technical podcast published several times per month, and it's a unique and nerdy deep dive into technical and engineering matters in the world of networking. The Packet Pushers tackles topics about the networking industry, about vendors, and networking technology. We don't apologize for being willfully technical, willing to ask complex questions and discuss marketing and generally take the networking industry apart at the seams. I'm Greg Farrow, and today we're having a sponsored show with Awawi to talk about networking and in particular the SDN strategy. So the first thing to do is to go around the table and introduce the guests from Awawi. First of all is Sam Aldrin. Why don't you introduce yourself to the audience and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having us over. And my name is Sam Aldrin. I work as a principal engineer at Huawei based at Santa Clara. I work in architecture and strategy, next generation technologies. Prior to Huawei, I worked at Cisco for more than a decade.
So you're actually still doing real work in the real world today?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Yes. And also with us is Sig Luft. Again, tell us a bit about what you're doing, Sig.
Hey, Greg. I'm a senior director in the SDN core team. I just recently came to Huawei. Most of my career has actually been in the startup space, so tragically have I cannot say anymore that I'm a hands-on programmer, but I dabble. I'm almost up to 25 years in the telecom space, so it's an extended period.
And for your crimes, you get to be in the telecom industry. Also joining us today is Mike McBride. Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, Greg. Yeah, so first of all, just wanted to thank you and Ethan for a great show. You know, without getting too sappy, you know, three of us are big fans, listen to your show quite a lot. I've personally been listening to your show for about a year and a half. I live down in Orange County, California, which is about an hour south of Los Angeles, and I'm based out of Santa Clara, California, which is about a six-hour drive or about an hour flight up there. So I travel up there quite frequently, and so you've kept me quite entertained for those many hours on the road, and it's been appreciated.
Oh, yeah, that's a bit distressing. I mean, I try not to think about the fact that people do listen to it, really, because it's just me raving most of the time, or at least that's
what I think. Yeah, it is. No, I'm just joking. But, yeah, it's, a lot of us, including myself, I'm not much hands-on anymore, and so just being reminded of the different intricacies of routing protocols and crazy stuff like social engineering. I listened to that one just the other week when I was driving over the into the LA basin, and it was quite fascinating. I think that was Michelle's show on. I just appreciate it, and one way to show thanks to you is to sponsor a show. And while we're at it, we're going to share our SDN vision. So I'm along with these guys. I work in technology strategy. I'm a principal engineer on the SDN core team. Very involved in the ONF, as we all are. Where I'm currently leading a data center project team, working on a variety of things, including documenting SDN security. Like the rest of us, we're very involved in standards. I'm very involved in the ITF. I've been a working group chair for PIM since 2004. So yes, multicast is still being used out there in the wild. To some of your audience, probably chagrined.
Multicast is one of those things that we love to hate to love.
Yeah, I know. It's being used for real things, IPTV and market data and other things. I was with Cisco for 18 years in a variety of capacities, and now I'm doing architecture development and standards work and strategy. So it's been an interesting career.
Today's sponsored show is about to introducing Awawi to the audience. So, Mike, why don't you kick off and tell us, obviously, I'm based in Europe, so I'm more familiar with Huawei because I run into them around a place. Huawei's much more popular in the European marketplace than it is in the US. Why don't we start off with saying, what is Huawei doing, and give us an overview of how they're coming to market?
So, yeah, I tell my friends that I work for Huawei, and their response, including my parents, they don't know how to pronounce it. They've never heard of it, which is pretty funny because, we're one of the largest telecom equipment manufacturers in the world. We go back and forth with that distinction with Ericsson. But we're big. We, have well over 100,000 employees, half of which are engineers. The nice thing about working for Huawei is that they put a huge amount of resources into innovation, into R&D. Even though we oftentimes work remotely, we are ultimately based out of Santa Clara, which is our R&D campus. And we actually work for FutureWay USA, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of Huawei. Huawei in the U.S. is known as FutureWay. Our focus is primarily on the service provider market, although we're in all aspects of the market, from consumer to enterprise to service provider. Huawei is kind of an interesting story of a company that, you know, sprung up out of the 80s, not in the Silicon Valley, but in China, and has become a company with products that span the consumer, enterprise, and service provider spectrum. We sell smartphones. Very few people in the U.S. know that.
I actually have a 3G modem made by Huawei here in the U.K. I've had one for 3 or 4 years. I've worked on some of the Huawei equipment in the consumer space, so at other people's houses who have Huawei. You don't really know, because it's usually branded by the carriers here in Europe, and they put their own logo on it. It's only when you get inside you realize it's in a Huawei device. I also have run into, in some of the carriers, for example, in Europe, they actually run Huawei in the backbone. I have a passing familiarity. I wouldn't class myself as familiar with the Huawei products, but yes, no, I've got an idea that the spread's quite large.
Yeah, very good. And that's more than most people in the U.S. know. So you're right. So we have anywhere from set-top boxes, a variety of enterprise products, you know, Wi-Fi, PBXs, DSLAMs, VNGs, BRASs, radio access equipment, fiber equipment, high-end routers and switches, as you just mentioned, transport equipment. You know, I'm sure I'm missing quite a lot. But, you know, it's really a truly end-to-end ICT offering, and that kind of fits well into our strategy. So, you know, most of our service provider customers, which the three of us primarily are working with, are in Asia, Middle East, Europe, Canada, Latin America. We serve about 45 of the world's top 50 telecom operators, including your very own British Telecom and France Telecom and Telefonica and others.
They're not my friends.
Okay.
All right, I hate them all. I hate them all equally, but I hate them all. I think they're all thieving corporations who hate their customers, really. But aside from that, yeah, no, I know all those names.
All right, well, we love them. So we're going to keep them as customers and try to make them happy. You know, and we appreciate you having, you know, us on there. It's being that we're primarily focusing on service provider, you know, customers. I know that the majority of your audience is on the enterprise space. So, you know, hopefully maybe starts a new trend of introducing service provider related topics. The last thing I wanted to say on that introduction is that, you know, it's no surprise, and particularly been in the news lately, that, you know, U.S. has not particularly embraced Chinese networking vendors. You know, we feel it's probably only a matter of time before the U.S. warms to the vendors from China. You know, we are a competitive threat. Other vendors are going to do what they can to protect their business. And, you know, thankfully, the three of us don't really have to worry about that stuff. We just focus on technical work. And hopefully at the end of the day, innovation and real solutions win out.
Yeah. I mean, thanks for addressing that security issue, because I think that argument has been skewed in a couple of different directions. And I think that there's two sides to that debate. And the fact that Huawei as a company comes from China, we should also understand that products from Cisco and Juniper go into Chinese networks. And any sort of debate that goes around that cuts both ways. And there's no honest answer that we can come up for both sides of that. And as you say, we need to just have a balanced debate about what those security issues are. Huawei is now moving into the networking space with an SDN strategy. And you know that Packet Pushers, of course, has talked a lot about software-defined networking over the last, seems like endlessly, for the last 2 years, really. But now we're actually starting to see some concrete announcements come out from the vendors around SDN instead of just sort of noise. Huawei's got an SDN strategy. You know, you've introduced yourselves as saying you're doing SDN. So
basically what it boils down to is that we're really striving to help resolve the pain points, particularly of our service provider customers. They need to reduce CapEx, OpEx. They need to be able to generate more revenue, because right now it's just really, really tough for them. They are having intense, you know, pressure from OTTs, and they need our help. They need help managing their networks. I met with a provider just a couple weeks ago, and they, you know, said that's their just number one pain right now, is just managing all the different vendors' equipment, the different OSs, and there's so many devices, it's just getting painful. So we're trying to help them develop new services, simplify managing their network, and hopefully doing so through the virtualization of their networking gear. And, you know, we believe that with OpenFlow-enabled SDN, we see that happening. So by having that logically centralized network control layer, that's able to maintain an inventory of all the network resources and controlling their allocation in response to the application's specified traffic demands. From a strategic perspective, we've fully embraced SDN and OpenFlow. We're not threatened by it, as probably people would think that the number one telecom equipment manufacturer in the world would be, but we're not. We're not just trying to weather the silly SDN storm. We're not trying to redefine it to protect any proprietary gear. We feel that SDN is inevitable, and we'll really provide some real solutions to these customer pain points that I just mentioned. So we're fully on board, and we'll let the chips fall where they may. It's kind of fits really well because, you know, I mentioned that we have such a broad product offering. We had Mobile World Congress last week where we made several announcements. We announced a strategy called SoftCom, which is our approach to the future of network architecture. And it's really based, it's really a cloud-based architecture that's based upon SDN concepts and utilizes OpenFlow as well as network functions virtualization.
Let me just pause there. So network functions virtualization, for those of you who don't know, is kind of like you heard me talking in packet pushes about software-defined networking, which is for the enterprise, where we talk about things like managing the campus LAN, doing network slicing, creating load balancing functions out of the networking. Network functions virtualization is a term that's unique to the carrier industry. It's almost like SDN for service providers, but it's not really. It's really just a different way of talking about applying the same technology in the space. And the goal of network functions virtualization, as I see it, and feel free to jump in here, guys, because I may need rescuing, is that the idea is to be able to provide services right the way out in the bottom of the tower or at the Wi-Fi base station or on the 4G broadband in the data centers. Instead of having everything in the center at a data center, we want to be able to add value to networking services right out at the edge in the little thing at the end of your street where your fiber optic gets terminated. We want to be able to see some sort of servers in there that can provide a range of maybe caching content or streaming video or to be able to provide compute services of some sort or email gateways out in those things. And network functions virtualization refers to the application of SDN to be able to slice and dice the traffic to support that concept. Is that approximately right?
That is, yeah. And this is operator-driven, which is what I really like about it. It's not vendor-driven. It's an operator-driven initiative. But they, you know, they keep having to buy all these boxes, you know, particularly for layer 4 through 7 services, you know, load balancing, intrusion detection, firewalling, and a lot of different vendor equipment, like I mentioned before. And they really want to just be able to move these functions to a commoditized server, x86 server. It saves on costs, but just also just the darn maintenance and management of all these different functions.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can also some interesting comments around the relationship between cloud. In particular, if you look at one of the features of cloud that has evolved in the data center, it's around the maintenance of workloads, moving things around. It's around finding the right place to put something. Or if you do have to fix something, move the active processes off of that piece of metal and swap out the piece of metal. So it's looking to leverage not just the CapEx side of the cloud data center evolution, but also the operational side of it. And I think there's an emphasis around how can the carriers benefit from the developments in the data center world that have led to things that we're seeing in the cloud space, you know, virtualization and SDN, and how could that be brought out into the carrier network?
Continuing on with our our end-to-end strategy, our intention overall is to be able to enable applications to be able to intelligently utilize the network, do so with OpenFlow to allow the forwarding of flows exactly as they're needed in a highly dynamic and programmatic way. So to kind of see, you know, this end-to-end strategy that we have and the announcements that we're making, you know, picture a variety of network segments on the bottom. You know, I'm waving my hands around right now. If you have different segments, whether it be access, backhaul, core on the bottom, and then you have above that controllers, multiple controllers, task-specific controllers across multiple domains. And then above that you have orchestrate to and between these controllers. And then above that, of course, you've got northbound APIs to applications and whatnot. But that's a picture of the end-to-end architecture that we'll be talking about. It includes this architecture orchestration function to be able to achieve that end-to-end delivery. It includes going across a variety of technologies, which Sam will talk about a little bit, particularly over optical and wireless, and to be able to coordinate the applications above with the network controls below. And the reason that we came up with this architecture is that each of these segments, you know, again, access, backhaul, core, transport, has its own unique requirements and responsibilities. And so by having these controllers handle these unique requirements, it's much more efficient. We've embraced OpenFlow as our southbound API. on the upper layers, there's other good protocols out there that have been developed or are being developed, such as Alto in the ITF, embraced in our members of OpenStack. In fact, last week, again, at Mobile World Congress, we announced something that's called Fusion Cloud, which is an OpenStack-powered cloud, which is, again, mostly aimed at carriers. There are some innovations that we've come up with that we worked with customers, one of which is CSO, which is cross-stratum optimization, which provides that intelligence needed between the application, arbitration, or stratum, and the network. So there's a lot that's under the hood, but basically that's kind of gives you an idea of kind of the overall architecture. And then, again, there's certain segments that we're focusing on. Instead of just kind of going purely end-to-end, there's certain segments that we want to discuss that we want to provide solutions to our customers, and we've been meeting with them and making sure that we provide what they want. Some of those include on the mobile backhaul side, you had this hugely complex layer 2 infrastructure that's being aggregated to layer 3. There's tons of devices.
MPLS is just way out of control for some networks today.
It is. It is. And
I know
so,
it's heinous for me to say things like that, but it is. I mean, MPLS is just, there's so many different types. You can fiddle around with, you know, you've got MPLS-TE, you've got RSVP-TE, you've got all these different capabilities. And I know as an architect, when I'm sitting down working on networks, it's taking me weeks to work through the MPLS opportunities to select one for a given problem.
And right. And also, when we talk about seamless MPLS to provide the complete mobile backhaul solution with packet core, it's quite complex, not only in terms of implementation, but to manage the networks, it becomes quite complex. Like, for example, how do you know where a specific problem has occurred, and how do you really debug to figure out, okay, this is the problem and this specific place it has occurred. We can talk about, for example, you have MPLS OEM, you have IP OEM, and all kinds of OEM, but when you talk about end-to-end, that's where the problem comes. And with the scalability numbers we're talking about, yeah, the access and aggregation, it's going to be a nightmare for customers to really manage the networks.
Because we've got more devices, more equipment than we've ever had before, and MPLS and, you know, all the technologies we're deploying to, it's not just MPLS, makes it more and more complex. Every month goes past, the networks get more complex, not less, and they cost more and more to run. Is that the general idea?
That's one aspect. And the other aspect is not all MPLS implementations are the same. For example, I could choose to implement a specific set of features within the control plane, and I may ignore to implement some of the OEM aspects related to that. So when you bring in the mix of vendor devices, and if you have to provide end-to-end, and if all of them do not work in harmony, providing similar set of features and similar set of functionalities, how do you ensure that end-to-end actually works? So you could come up with, for example, I could say, I have a specific set of tool set, and the same kind of tool set may not be available with other vendor equipment. So how do I ensure that the whole thing actually works? Then you bring in the play, bring into play the EMS, the NMS, and all the OSS architecture. Then how do you actually ensure things actually work? And within the network, if you really look at it, the ownership of, for example, the carrier lies, even though if it is the same company which actually owns the whole network end-to-end, but there are different divisions who actually manage the core network to aggregation to access. So how do you ensure everything actually is or managed end-to-end without any hindrance? So there are real logistical issues, not just purely technical issues, which actually play a major role in providing end-to-end solutions. So that's where, if you really look at it, it's not that easy just by having a technical solution, but to enable user to manage the networks, that is where the challenge is. And that's the fundamental problem I see whenever I talk to a specific customer.
You know what, that is the fundamental problem right there, you know, that whole management of the, particularly of the mobile backhaul networks. You know, and again, just another thing that we announced last week was something that called LTE Haul. That was something that we're providing as a solution to do exactly what you just described, Sam, and that is to do the end-to-end support for management as well as the optimization of mobile backhaul networks. And it leverages SDN to be able to separate the network service bearing from the control. And that's true. You know, all these different network segments that we're working on, including, you know, metro access and core, fiber access networks, the border, B&G that Sig will talk about, transport networks. You know, really a lot of it has to do with being able to allow SDN to make the proactive, not the reactive decisions on how to steer the traffic, which content to use, which bitrate to use based upon subscriber profiles and policies and congestion, and then use OpenFlow to install the necessary forwarding on the explicit paths. Really, without getting into each of the different segments, that's really kind of our overall vision. And then there's a last thing that I just wanted to mention was as far as standardization goes, there's really a lot of good working happening in a variety of standards organizations. Again, we're all involved with. We do feel for SDN, however, that the ONF is really the leading SDN forum for thought leadership and architecture. You know, they, you know, really believe and are dedicated to, you know, the transformation of networking and direct programmability. Not everybody believes in that whole direct programmability of network elements, and we do.
No, and just as from somebody who's an outsider, what you're indirectly referring to there is the fact that certain parts of the industry is moving to try and put an API on top of BGP and to allow programmatic access to MPLS, which I feel is probably flawed. If you want to keep your legacy networks of 20-year-old or burnt-up, you know, built-up rubbish, then doing something with BGP is probably sounds like a good idea if you want to make not spend any money. But I don't think the future of networking is well served by holding on to your legacy assets. You need to move forward. So, Sig, we've talked a few times about BNG here as part of the E2E architecture. Do you want to talk a little bit more about what Mike's and outline that to the audience?
For those who are unfamiliar with it, BNG stands for Broadband Network Gateway. It's really the first device that the home subscriber hits when they are connecting to the internet through their carrier. Not the first physical device, but the first layer 3 device. It's at the BNG where you get authenticated, so it says, yes, this is a paying customer. Oh, this customer is paying for IPTV, or this customer has these services. And so when you initially turn on your service, this is the device you contact, and all of your traffic runs through this device. And that makes it an extremely powerful point in the network. You can do a lot of things at this point in the network. What's really fascinated me with Huawei is with their SDN strategy, they've actually gone and developed some actual hardware and have some working prototypes out there. In my past lives, it's always been the case that the last thing you do is invest in some hardware when you're prototyping stuff. So I was very impressed with what Huawei has done. So if you take a look at the BNG and one of the initiatives at Huawei is called SoftBNG. And really what they've done is they've taken the BNG functionality and they've taken it effectively off box, and they've developed a OpenFlow completely standard interface on their box so that you can have the entire forwarding plane delaminated from the control plane. This is really an initial step where you can start to consolidate some of the knowledge of your overall network. It's not just about one device's view of the world. And then from this point, probably the most spoken about network function virtualization activities is called service chaining. People are looking at using SDN as a way to say, okay, this subscriber's traffic is tied to a number of extra features, so we're going to chain those features together so that Bob's subscription might look different than Mary's subscription. And it's just a matter of what services they chain through. The soft BNG becomes a very powerful point to orchestrate service chaining as well as just basic BNG function. And this whole activity sort of explodes into a very powerful control plane.
So that broadband network gateway, so BNG is broadband network gateway, is really referring to that head end. You know, your broadband goes back to some box in the middle of the street, and we want to add some value to those services by as you say, chaining them together, and that might be, you know, running them through a particular proxy, or maybe you've got access to a video streaming service, or, you know, whatever those are. I mean, I can't even imagine what sort of things they'd be doing with those.
Exactly. But, I mean, you know, so, some of the most, I think, compelling features is currently the functionality that you have in an appliance in the home. Those types of things can start to move up into these points in the network.
For example, games.
Games, perhaps not so much, but, for instance, firewalls.
Virus scanning.
Exactly. Okay. Those types of functions become very appropriate for the carrier to offer as a value-added service to their customers.
So, Sam, the other side of this, of course, is optical transport. How do we – we've got an end-to-end architecture. You've always got cable in the ground at the end of the day, and your area of focus is around the carrier space in the optical transport. How do you see that fitting into an end-to-end design?
Huawei is number one in the transport market. We know the actual problems involved in providing different services over the transport. And as you can see, transport pretty much is considered the option when you talk about different services on top of it. What we have come up with in terms of providing end-to-end strategy is how to simplify the whole problem space and to provide a better solution model to the customer. So we have, rather than just looking from the technology perspective, we have gone back and tried to see, okay, what are the things customer is actually using it for, and what are the things the customer is having issues with, and how to move forward in terms of the solution. Traditionally, services are provided basically on top of GMPLS, and you can run software services on top of that. So not many optical devices, not only just Huawei, but other vendors, if you take into consideration, may or may not support GMPLS. And the other fundamental problem is to manage those devices. Either you have to buy the vendor-specific EMS and NMS, and or you have to ensure that there is a third party which actually supports your devices. So to provide end-to-end solution, it's quite complex. Anytime you want to provide the end-to-end services, you also bring into some of these layer three devices like PE routers and so into the mix. So the total cost of the end-to-end solution goes up. So in order to simplify the whole thing, so why don't we actually look from different perspective rather than just enhancing the control plane, rather trying to bring down the cost and how to manage and simplify the whole architecture. We have taken this route where in order to solve the problems, so we need to have a common interface as a first and fundamental requirement, and to provide an abstraction to be taken out of the elements and the network and to be managed by the software. The third thing is to build services on top of that so that one need not go and control every device at every point of time and to manage each of those devices. So once we taken those three elements and try to address that problem, we found OpenFlow as the common factor where you could control these optical elements directly or indirectly, and you could actually build a common interface. And we also try to leverage some of these technologies like MPLS, which already set us with a good data plane architecture.
Yeah, I mean, that's an important point right there, right? Is it's possible for OpenFlow to interoperate with MPLS. You don't have to
totally
have one or the other. And a lot of people miss that point in the discussion, is you can have an MPLS network coming right up to a certain point, and then it's OpenFlow from that part onwards.
It's not necessary both are separate or like both cannot interoperate. For example, OpenFlow standard as of now can actually support MPLS directly, so you could program a device at the MPLS level. Apart from that, we also want to leverage, because the OpenFlow already supports, so why can't we build an architecture and an overlay architecture which is based on MPLS so that you could actually use the OpenFlow protocol and actually program the devices at the MPLS level. So you could establish LSPs directly from element to element, yeah, or end to end. So that's how we look at it, and so we could build hierarchical LSPs, yeah, and we could build
overlay architecture. So what you're really saying there is you want your optical transport to come into the modern era of being changeable faster. in the same way.
Totally.
Yeah, what we want to be able to do in the campus is to change our campus configuration with a piece of software, because that's faster than going down and twiddling your fingers at the console. Same thing applies to optical transport. Instead of using GMPLS and then spending months planning out how to make a change, and then you make a change and it does what you think it does, or you hope it does, you know, you want to be able to get into a piece of software and say, can you reroute this lambda from here to here and make all the connections and then sanity check it for me before you then say, right, do that. That's the sort of
totally.
Thing we're doing.
Totally. Yep. So once we have this level of information abstracted out, you know, it's all in the software you could control, so you need not really worry about whether this device supports or not, because you get the abstracted view of the topology at physical layer as well as topology layer or service layer, and you could actually manage the network end-to-end. So the cost of managing the OPEX will come down pretty drastically. And the second thing is, in terms of capital investment, so now if you're not really building too much intelligence into the box, rather you're investing in the software. So the CapEx is also pretty low, relatively. Hmm. So forward-looking...
Let me ask a slightly deviation question here. It just struck me. Does that mean the silicon gets a little bit simpler too? So what's in the box doesn't have to be quite as complex as it is today?
I believe so, because, for example, the device we have right now is already open flow support. The NE40E of Huawei, which is the edge router, actually directly supports open flow. So once the silicon supports open flow, you pretty much could program and you could do a lot of things on top of that. So that's how the cost could come down from hardware point of view.
You can keep reusing the same silicon over and over for different topologies. It might have different PHY layers or different physical characteristics, but at the core of the design, the silicon is repeatably the same.
So, and if the hardware do not support open flow, it doesn't mean that you cannot really work with the solution, because if you have that information abstracted out and you have a way to program the device, whether it is open flow or not, you could still have this end-to-end architecture make it happen. So that's how we look at it. So one of the primary use case we wanted to solve is data center interconnection, because if you look at some of service providers, kind of even Google, you could call it a service provider, they manage their whole back-end network with open flow. So if they could do that, why can't a service provider really do that model by bringing in a scheduling factor into the mix of managing the resources and various elements? And that's how we wanted to do it. We have implemented and we have demonstrated this work as well with our hardware. The effort right now we are trying to do within ONF as part of new transport discussion group is to bring every vendor into the mix and to have a common understanding of what we are trying to achieve, and to standardize this both southbound as well as northbound interfaces,
yeah,
and to manage the network. So we are pretty much there with the charter, and we are taking the next step of demonstrating the end product as well as interop test with other vendors as well.
Okay, so Mike, what we've talked about here is that Huawei is committed to open flow as a technology in the physical, in the silicon architecture of the device. And we're really talking about how Huawei wants to bring a software layer on the top to provide more flexible networking services. Now, in the service provider space, I guess if I'm going to look back and summarize where we're at, we're saying Huawei does networking, it does, big believer in open flow as a core technology, and SDN is the future. In the service provider space, we're saying network functions virtualization is where Huawei is. Huawei's got a strategy and you're bringing that to market. Is that a fairly good summary there?
That is. And the only thing I would add is that, you know, we're not just dipping our toe in the SDN water and claiming that we went swimming. You know, we're mm-hmm. jumping full on in.
Right.
You know, we have prototypes, we have real hardware implementations, working with customers on trials, participating in ONF's PlugFest interoperability events with real hardware. So it's real.
So you've got products, you're committed to it, there's a roadmap, people can come and talk to you about it, and you've got things that you want to, you've got messages around that. Now that process extends then specifically into the service provider space around the BNG, which is the broadband network gateway, which is part of the network functions virtualization. If you go and search on the internet, if you're not familiar with NFV and you're interested in the open flow SDN part of that, just search for NFV, and there's lots of white papers where there's particularly just one that's well distributed around the place, which talks about how carriers and service providers can use SDN to provide multiple functions on a traffic flow. So, Sig, we talked about the broadband network gateway as part of an end-to-end architecture. and that's going to use OpenFlow to enable a new range of services in the future. And that's how WoW is coming to market there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the a big piece of that vision is that as carriers start to pursue new types of services, I think Mike talked a little bit about the threat of over-the-top services coming into the market. For carriers to be able to participate in those value chains, they're going to need to be able to offer environments where the over-the-top players can actually do something, whether it's value add on the caching side or whether it's more interactive type services. What OpenFlow and service chaining can bring to the mix is the ability to chain in not just embedded, hard-coded type of functions, but actually chain in a sort of more of a higher order platform, so that as a carrier says, okay, I'm willing to work with this over-the-top player and they have some functionality that they can write on a x86 server, that can become part of the service chain. As opposed to, no, you have to go to vendor X, Y, or Z and you have to negotiate how to get this into their embedded operating system, etc. It's
right.
Those two different things that really make the potential for new revenue exciting, I think, with OpenFlow or SDN in general.
Well, there is revenue attached to OpenFlow and SDN, and I don't think a lot of people quite understand that. They do this service differentiation and delineation, and this ability to guide traffic through a particular pathway is not something we've historically done because it's been too complicated. I think it changes the way the model works. Now, to summarize what Sam's been talking about, we've been saying that today optical transports have their own methodology and their own processes, but optical transport for a carrier is a key part of the backbone, and it has to fit into the end-to-end vision that Huawei's doing. And I think, Sam, you've outlined the new ways that SDN's going to be able to provide better programmatic control of your optical backbone.
That's right, Greg. As you can see, for the folks who are interested, they could follow the new transport discussion group as part of ONF, and as you can see, almost every optical vendor is part of that, and we are moving along at rapid pace, and hopefully we will have a better end-to-end architecture, not just from Huawei perspective, but from industry perspective.
Okay, so I guess we've probably been through the topics that we wanted to cover with Huawei today. In summary, what you're looking at today is that Huawei's got a product right around the service provider portfolio, and they're focusing the service provider in the US market. Don't forget that they've got a wider portfolio of products, but that's what we're talking about in today's show. Please feel free to head on over to the Packet Pushers website. You can find more information about today's show in the blog post that accompanies it at packetpushers.net. You can always follow Packet Pushers on Twitter as @packetpushers. I'd like to thank our guests from Huawei for sponsoring our show today. Thanks to Mike, Sig, and Sam for joining us and to share some knowledge about Huawei and supporting the show. As always, if you have any questions, you can send email to us on packetpushers@gmail.com. We do actually have a forum at forum.packetpushers.net, and I do try and patrol and participate in there as best I can. And as always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.